The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Rice Podcast, or Mississippi Rice portion of the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast. I have with me, as always, Dr. Jason Bonaday and very special guest, Dr. Larry Falconer, our chief economist here at the DREC.
Welcome, Larry.
Well, thank you. Well, they didn't mention that I'm the only economist, but...
Well, you're the only economist right now before you run off to the greater northern parts of Maine to get rid of us down here.
I'm just going to be put out to pasture. This has been a great place to work, and everybody's been very gracious. Well, for the most part.
All right, Larry. question burning on my mind: Oklahoma, Texas, or the Mississippi Delta? What's hotter in July?
The hottest place I have ever been in July is Laredo, Texas.
I'll give you that.
I've never been to Laredo, Texas. But all three of them are plenty warm. We'll just put it that way.
There's no humidity in Laredo, is it?
You know, you'd be surprised.
Really?
I stand corrected. It's not far enough away from the coast. Now, it's not as bad. The humidity's not as high as it is here, but it is miserable.
It's not as bad today. It's cloudy.
83 degrees in the middle of July in the Mississippi Delta. I'll buy that any day, especially when the air conditioner's out in our building. So it's cooler to be outside than inside right now.
Absolutely.
So we're struggling real hard to bring y'all a podcast with the air conditioner that don't work.
So, Larry, we've spent, we've talked about rice, everything production-wise up to this point. How do you feel about the rice market going into the end of the season, into the fall?
It looks like, from the numbers that USDA's come out with, bigger acreage being projected, that we're probably going to slide a little bit more probably into the fall, unfortunately. The overall situation with all the row crops, a little bit stronger dollar, hopefully we kind of bottomed in the row crops. I know that wasn't what we're supposed to talk about here. We might slide a little bit more in the rice before we hit that seasonal low and start coming back. The whole situation, if we want to talk about the row crops, we're probably looking at some numbers this morning. We're about 40 cents a bushel lower on soybeans than we were this time a year ago. And we've had a big, big break in the soybean market, had a big break in the corn market with respect to futures prices. And
so, Larry, when we're talking about those soybeans, I've heard a lot of guys last several days to week say, we got to get soybean price back up there because I don't know what the world's going to look like with $7.50 or $8 soybeans. Where is the floor, I guess, with everything you hear going on in the world right now with soybeans?
I think we're pretty close to it, Bobby, for what that's, that's just my opinion for what it's worth.
So we know, Larry, I mean, it's... Today, what is the price of soybeans, or just ballpark?
We were sitting at about $8.60.
Okay. Because I hadn't looked in a while, so I wasn't sure.
Yeah, last year we were about $9.05 a bushel on the corn. It looks like we're about $3.48, $3.50 in that area, and we were about $3.66 a year ago. It looks like at this point in time, there's not a lot of concern that we're going to run into weather trouble up north in the big I states, production-wise. So, looking at a pretty decent-sized crop again.
And how is what's going on in Brazil affecting that market price?
Well, the Brazilian crop was on the soybeans was really big this year, set a record. They're expecting another big record next year. Now they've had some problems getting soybeans to port, but they've been exporting probably more than their share of beans here. Like I said, on the beans and the corn, we hopefully got it built in, and the big crop dialed in, and then the hubbub with the tariffs, which is no small thing.
But that's what you hear everybody talking about right now, and you see a lot on social media, the tariffs, the tariffs, the tariffs. Is that a, to me, if you look at a tariff, that's a long run thing.
Yeah, it's a tax on, it's a tax on, whether you're importing or exporting. If you're going in to a country, it'll be a 25% tax on, soybeans going to China. And to kind of put that in perspective, last couple of years, we've exported about a little over half our soybean crop, about 50 to 52% of the soybean crop. In 2017, 60% of those went to China. So you can do a little fast figuring here. If my Aggie mathematics don't fail me, that's about one out of three rows. The production off of that in the U.S. was put on a boat and shipped to China.
So when you talk about a tax,
mm-hmm.
where is that tax placed? Is it placed on the producer? Is it placed on the consumer coming back? How is that tariff going to affect our producers?
Well, it's the technically it's collected when the shipment is made into a country. So it's a tax. So if soybeans were going into China from the U.S. and they got your 25% import tariff, that 25% would be basically collected and added to the price. And that burden's going to fall on two different folks. It's going to fall on American producers because it'll be backed up through them because the middlemen aren't going to eat it. They're a margin business. And part of it's going to fall on Chinese consumers. So depending on how it works out, that's it looks to me like, and relative to where we were a year ago, it looks to me like if it went through, the market's telling us it looks like it's going to be about 40 cents a bushel. That's the break that we got in the futures when it first hit. If you look at where we are cash wise relative to a year ago, we're off about 40 cents a bushel from there. And that's no small thing.
No, 40 cents is a lot of money when you sell in volume like we do.
Yeah.
Well, Larry, back to where we started when we moved on to soybeans, you talked about the floor on the price.
Mm-hmm.
What's sustainable? That's a terrible word. Bobby hates the word sustainable, but
I don't hate the word sustainable. I just don't think it's being defined necessarily properly.
But in this context, what can we sustain price wise? There, I took the able off of it, and just what can we sustain?
Yeah, well, y'all help put together our production cost estimates every year, and when you look at it, and I'll define sustainability as being able to, you know, make a living out of production agriculture.
So basically, Larry defines sustainability like I do.
Would that be defined correctly? Is that what you're saying?
It doesn't matter as long as you're farming next year.
That's right. I agree 100%.
And being able to pay for the equipment. You know, when we look at our numbers with the yields that we got in there, which are a little bit over 60 bushels an acre for the irrigated beans year in, year out, and about 42, 43, somewhere in there for the dryland beans. You know, we're looking at something, you know, in the 10.25, $10.50 a bushel to cover everything. Now, if you get a little better yield than that, so much better. And y'all can speak to the pest pressure that we've got budgeted in there, whether it be.
Well, and Larry's talking about the budgets that the MSU Extension, or the Ag Econ Department, they put out every year, and I think those things, man, they get a lot of attention. I know they're widely used, and we've tried to do a really good job of making the inputs that are in there realistic, you know, for what's actually going on out in the world.
Well, and I would say the way we've approached that through Larry's guidance of getting us all in a room and sitting down and saying, what do you need to make a crop? What goes out to make a crop in Mississippi on average? And then what we placed in there, I won't say is a, quote, worst case scenario, but this is a realistic budget if you've got to attack pigweeds or if you got a multiple spray for barnyard grass, when we talk about something to rice.
Right, and the insect pressure and, you know, all the other inputs like growth regulators on cotton, you know, those type of things that have to be factored into your budget.
So that budget might, like Larry said earlier, be, well, you got to make $10 plus beans to break even. Not everybody's going to need to use every tool that we've put into that budget.
Right.
Once again, and if the yields are a little better, that makes a huge difference on the price. But having said all that, if you look at the numbers long haul and talking with folks, it's probably something that we'd need to be. It'd be good to get soybeans back in the low $10 range. And on corn, we need something around $4 a bushel.
Well, Larry, not asking you to make any projections, but looking back, you know, in your experience, when we do get into a situation where we're close to a floor price level, in years past, how has that influenced the cropping, the mix in future years? Or maybe a better question is, when our cropping mix is influenced by price, how long is the cycle? Yeah, what triggers it, and how long is the cycle?
Yeah, I've only been in the Delta here since 2012, and where I've been before, some of the options that you got were somewhat limited. Here, I would say a good example would be kind of what's happened with cotton. You know, the cotton margins have improved over the last couple of years. They were really sorry, you know, shortly after I got here.
No doubt.
And so, you know, in a couple of 3 years, we swung from, what, about 300,000, got back up to 650,000 or something. I would say probably going to take about 3 years.
Yeah, 90 plus cent cotton will swing those acres pretty dang quick.
Yeah. And so to answer your question, it usually probably take 3 seasons.
I guess I am asking you to project now, and Bobby, you're welcome to chime in on this too. You know, if soybeans get low and stay low, you know, we like to talk about rice here, but I mean, is that, obviously that would be positive for rice, but can it swing it that far, or is it going to, you know, shift to cotton? I mean, y'all, rice and cotton seem to always be associated, I guess, because of the inputs that they require being higher than some of the other crop options that we have.
That's a good question. Y'all might be able to address it better than me. By and large, from what I've seen, the best cotton ground and the best rice ground is not the same.
No doubt about that.
You know? So we've got some limitations on switching there.
But I think the question with that is, but the beans will grow on both.
That's correct. Yep. Yeah, the beans will grow on both, and there's undoubtedly, like I say, I'm not an agronomist or like y'all are, but there's undoubtedly benefits to rotating crops just from, you know, being able to schedule your labor and your machinery during the year. So there's going to be some limitations there. But, yeah, if you're asking me about rice, we probably got a rough year coming up next year. Hopefully they can get this stuff worked out with the tariffs and we just, you know, move on up to where we could, you know, get back in the, you know, a little closer to 200,000 acres or something like that.
You know, Larry, I think this might be a good time to mention that generator that you built. That kind of shows, hey, if my soybean price is this, if my rice price is this, where do I need to put my acres? Could you talk a little bit about that spreadsheet?
Yeah, that was put together several years back, and what it's aimed at doing is taking cost of production numbers that would be specific to one person's operation that they could enter. We've got them set up by default with the estimates that we have, and then looking after you set up a structure where you're looking at alternative yields going across, it would show relative profitability between both soybeans and rice, and also corn and soybeans. I know it's a little tougher in general to substitute corn on rice ground, but gives the producer a chance to, you know, adjust yields accordingly on that, and give somebody going into next year a chance to make an informed decision for their particular operation.
So before we sat down in here, Larry, you said you had a couple things that you specifically wanted to mention when you walk in, and I know they had to deal with the FSA. So what do you got in your hand?
There was a really big change in the farm program made earlier this year. Actually, it's pretty much unprecedented. The farm bill was reopened, and cotton was added back into the Title I of the farm program. The way that was reintroduced is kind of a sleight of hand, where it's not cotton lint that's being supported now. It's seed cotton. And there will be a sign up for that program. It's scheduled to start, according to some information we got from Farm Service Agency, towards the end of July. Producers should be getting a letter with their planting history, which will be used to update their base acres. And what will happen is that all the acres that are now generic acres, which can have some impact on rice program receipts, will be going away this year. And the producers, or actually it'll be the landowner's decision on how that generic base acres will be transferred over to seed cotton base or prorated out among the crops that were planted from 2008 to 2012, I believe. And what I would like to say is that we do have some spreadsheets available that to help in making that decision with our friends over at Louisiana State University. We're looking at having some workshops over there. It'll either be at Winsboro or Rayville later this month, and hopefully we'll have a meeting set up in the North Delta in the Cahoma County area probably about the same time to help with that decision. But there's two alternatives, and gives the landowner or interested party a chance to sign up for the either a PLC or an ARC program on 80% of the base acres if they hadn't been planting cotton during that time frame, or they can, or if they had planted during that time frame, to update to those, not to exceed the generic base acres on a farm, or they can prorate out plantings, you know, if they'd been planting, say, rice on a farm and wanted to switch over to a rice base, they have the opportunity to do that in option two.
So by adding that in, we just get another chance to move our bases around again.
Yes, they would not in the legislation. It's not a chance to build base. Okay. You won't be able to add any base, but like you say, you'd be able
can
to shift
reallocate.
Around.
Yeah,
on the generic base acres. Yeah.
So you can't pull any base acres from another crop into this cotton base, but you can just move around your generic base.
Yeah, the generic base is going away. Okay. As of this crop year, the 2018 crop year, we're not going to have any more generic base.
And you feel like that's a good thing or a bad thing for Delta Agriculture?
Well, over the many years that I've dealt with farm program, there was basically two axioms. One of them was to maximize rice base, and the other one was to maximize cotton base when dealing with the farm program. And when cotton base went away, it was a pretty big deal. So I think in general it'll probably be a positive thing, but it's like the programs that we got now. The ARC program, you know, how much downside price protection is it going to give you relative to the price loss coverage program? And hopefully in the new farm bill, folks will have a chance to revisit that decision as well.
So, Larry, is it Is it all right to talk about the fact that you're leaving?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I think where you're going is pretty cool. Tell folks where you're headed.
Well, my son and daughter-in-law and grandkids live in Belfast, Maine, which is one of the prettier places you'll ever see. It's right on the coast about halfway up, but it's about 45 minutes from Acadia National Park. Leaving the Delta is not easy. Like I said, everybody's been very gracious, and this is a great place to work, but not getting any younger, and the grandkids are growing up fast, so that's
and everybody needs a contact in Maine, right?
Everybody needs a contact in Maine.
That's right. About this time of year, it doesn't look too bad normally, although they are having a little blast of heat right now.
I'm pretty excited about it. We're going to visit Larry.
Now, you said we've been going to visit California and our buddies out there, and we hadn't made it yet, but we will go visit.
We're not done yet.
All right. But, I sure hate to see you go, Larry. You've brought a lot to the table here for us. And always down the hall in the office if you have any kind
dude,
of...
Dude is a numbers wizard.
Numbers wizard, completely. You know, like we're talking about that Rice budget generator. That's stuff that they wouldn't hear before you were here, Larry.
Well, like I say, it's Tim Walker helped on that. Y'all have helped tremendously on any project that I've needed assistance on, which is most of them. And like I said, I'm much obliged to everybody.
And hey, guys, don't feel bad because Larry's going to only be a short phone call away. And we now have the capability to take phone calls live on the podcast. So you can't escape us, Larry, even though you're going to move almost to Canada.
Well, that's fair enough. I don't think they got any warrants out on me here, so I'm not trying to get away.
All right, well, we're going to shut it down for today. So like always, if y'all have any questions, holler at us, and we'll get out there and see you just as soon as we can.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.